Well, good morning. Good morning, Summit Church. It's great to be here. If you actually have your physical Bible, I got it. I got it this morning. You can open up to Acts chapter 1, or if you just got it on your phone, which I'm actually not a Bible, I'm not like a snob about the paper one. Like, I actually use my phone all the time, my Bible on my phone all the time. So you can just turn to it, Acts 1:8. And as you're turning there, I really do hope you had a great Thanksgiving with your family and didn't eat too much, but you did eat some really good food. And, you know, as I was kind of getting ready for this sermon, you know, I was thinking about some of the concepts that we were singing in that song, that nothing stands in the way of God. Like, whatever he is going after, God is gonna win. And one of the things that God longs to win is he longs to win this world to himself. And so even as I was just singing that song and listening to Curtis talk about that nothing can overcome God, that's really what I'm talking about today, because what I'm gonna be talking about is how to be a witness. Okay, like, how do we, like, the Bible calls us to be witnesses. We use that language in our discipleship, like being in, we use an identity language, like we're worshipers, we're family members, we're servant, we're stewards. That's what Pastor JD's been preaching on, being a steward, that identity. But then we talk about being a witness. And as I like thought about that, I was like, man, we are like, as Christians, as human beings, in the way, in the original design, and as believers, God has like designed us in a certain way. And in that design, we're meant to live in a certain way. We're actually meant to live out of that design. And I remember my dad telling me a story when I was like a kid, and he had been in the army in his 20s. And he was stationed in Germany, in Heidelberg, Germany, and he got himself an old beat up diesel Mercedes-Benz. And he bought it because a Mercedes-Benz can go fast. Like, I didn't actually know that at the time. I mean, maybe they do in America, but he said in Germany, Mercedes-Benz go really fast. And he said they're not really fun to drive around the small streets of Germany. They actually don't handle very well in the small streets. But once you get on this thing called the Autobahn, which is a freeway with no speed limits, he says that thing comes alive. You put it into fifth gear, you put the pedal to the metal, and it just opens up. Like, it does what it's supposed to do when it is in fifth gear. And he said, you know, I was driving really fast, but there were guys that were in Ferraris and Porsches. And those guys have a sixth gear they can get into. And he's like, and I'm driving like 100 miles an hour. Those guys are driving 140 miles an hour. You have to get over. If you don't get over, they honk at you and they do this. Okay, and I was like, that's not that bad. He's like, in Europe, it's bad, okay? We do stuff like that too, but it's not this, all right? So they drive fast. He's like, but the car, that's what the car is designed to do. Like you don't get a Porsche because you need to pile in six kids, right? You don't go rent a Porsche when you're moving and you're towing a trailer. If you've got a Porsche, you drive it because you want to go fast. That's what it was designed for, and that's exactly what it does. Every single part of a Ferrari, a Porsche, or any car like that is designed to go fast. The gears, the tires, the type of tires that go on there, the brakes, even the brakes are designed for a fast car. And in the same intentionality that the people that design Porsches have when they think about what's gonna go into it, is the same kind of intentionality that God has when he created humanity and when he brings you from death to life as a believer. There is that level of intentionality of how you're made, how you're designed. Every single part of you is designed to live in a certain way. And if you don't, you're like a Porsche that's stuck in second gear. And that's like a shame, because a Porsche is never designed to stay in second gear. It's designed to be in fifth or sixth gear and just go as fast as it possibly can. And so as believers, we can ask the question, what should I do? But the best question you can ask is, what was I designed to do? What was I designed to do just as a human being? And after God changed my life radically, what now am I designed to do? And make no mistake, when you became a Christian, he did change you radically. 2 Corinthians 5:17 says, "Therefore, if anyone is in Christ, he is a new creation. Behold, the old is gone. New things have come." You're a completely new creation. Another word for creation is creature. Like, you've been completely transformed. Another metaphor the Bible uses is, you were a dead body, and now that dead body is alive. And that's the difference. That's the change. And so, what were you designed to do? We call that being a disciple, being a follower of Christ. And like I said earlier, we define discipleship with identities. Because God, when God transforms you, he does that work and he gives you this identity. You don't have to work towards it. So he gives it to you and then you can live out of it, right? He does the effort first. He gives you something and then you can do effort. But he starts it, right? And I said them earlier, but let me say them again. Worshiper, family member, servant, steward, witness. And it's this one that I want to talk about today. Is that you were created, you were designed. When he gave you a new life, it was actually built into you to be able to talk to people about Jesus and witness what you know, seen, and have heard about who Jesus Christ is. And so I want to walk through that today. I want to walk through what does it mean to be a witness, and then how can we be a witness? Right, so Acts 1:8 is where we get this word from, okay? It's where we kind of get the word, like it's how we define the identity. And what Acts 8 says is, "But you will receive power when the Holy Spirit has come upon you, and you will be my witnesses," right, "in Jerusalem and in all Judea and Samaria and to the ends of the earth." So it's like, I'm gonna send the Holy Spirit. I'm gonna give you the power to be a witness. I've designed you to be a witness. So that's like a definition of it. And then I want you to be witnesses. I want the church to be witnesses everywhere. That's what that means. He's just saying all over the world. I want you to go all over the world and be witnesses for me. And so that's where we get that word. And so as I dive into like what a witness is, what I want to do is I want to define that word by looking at all different places in the Bible, because God actually cares about this so much that he uses more than just one word to talk about this concept. He uses more than just one metaphor. It's that important. He wants us to understand and then to live out this design, this identity of being a witness. And so if we look at Acts 1:8, that word witness is a Greek word called martus. It's used 35 times in the New Testament. I will not look at all 35 instances with you. But three of those times, it actually means martyr. In fact, the word martyr comes from this word. A martyr is somebody that is killed because they are a Christian and they refuse to not be a Christian up to the point of death. So someone's like, I'm gonna kill you unless you're not a Christian, unless you say that you won't be a Christian. And that person says, I'm not gonna do that. I would rather die knowing, like proclaiming Christ than live and say I'm not a Christian. That's a martyr. But it's only used three times in that way in the New Testament. Eight times this word is used in a legal sense. So it's just like, you go and you give a testimony to what you've seen, heard, or know about a certain situation. You do it one time and then you're done. So that leaves 24 instances in the New Testament where this word means something else. So what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna look at eight different passages in the Bible that define this. And what that is saying, that's what God means when he talks about being a witness. It's more than just giving a testimony in a legal sense, but it's also not just talking about being martyred for your faith. It's something different. So let's start. We'll start at the very beginning, because I think God built this in to what it means to be human. In Genesis 1, when God creates the whole, like all of creation, there's one aspect, there's one part of creation that stands out in all of Genesis 1, and it's when he creates human beings. Because he says something unique in Genesis 1 about human beings that he doesn't say about anything else. He says, let's create human beings in our image. Human beings stand apart from all of the rest of creation because we're made in the image of God. And what is an image supposed to do? An image is supposed to remind you of something. So if I click on my cell phone, don't touch my cell phone, David. If I click on my cell phone, my picture of my wife is gonna come up. The reason a picture of my wife comes up is because I wanna remember her. And she's beautiful. I love her. A part of my life is being married to her. And so I wanna remember that often. Like after it kind of gets a look at my face and it goes into my phone, I've got a picture of my three kids. It's an image of them. It reminds me of them. It reminds me that I'm a dad and I love being a dad and I wanna be a good dad and I wanna be the best husband that I possibly can. Like the images are there to remind us of something. Now, when the Bible was written, when Genesis was written, the primary images that they would have had are statues. They would have had statues and maybe some paintings on a wall. But statues are really, it takes a long time to make them and they're expensive. So the main people that made statues were kings. And what kings would do is they would have these statues created of themselves and maybe their wife, and they would put them all over the kingdom. And everywhere you went in the kingdom, you would see images of the king. And the whole point of that was to remind you whose kingdom you were in. That's the king, and that's whose kingdom you're in. So when God creates us in his image, that's one of the things that he's doing. He is building in. He doesn't just create stone images. He creates living images who he tells to multiply and make even more images. And in a world, think about this, in a world where that was perfect, that there was no sin, every single human being would have been an image of God or a witness to who the king really is. And that's in a perfect world. So if you lived back then, everywhere you would have gone and every single person you would have seen, they would have reminded you of the goodness and the power and the glory and the majesty of God. That's how we were created even before sin was in the world. This identity of being a witness, this design is built into being fully human. Is that you? Like when you think about that right now, it's like, do I do that really well? Like when I walk around the world, am I displaying, am I bearing the image of God well, right? But then sin enters the world. It cracks the image of God. It doesn't completely destroy it, it cracks it. But this idea of God being like, I want my people to bear my image. This witness design and identity God carries on. He goes to this guy named Abram and he tells him, Abram, I'm gonna choose you to be a very special family for me. And I'm gonna bless you and I'm gonna multiply you and your family is gonna be my people. And what he says to him in Genesis 12 is, I'm gonna bless you and that blessing is to go to other people. I'm gonna bless you so that you will be a blessing. And then he says to him, and all families on earth are going to be blessed because of the blessing I am going to give you. So when God starts this special family that will one day become the nation of Israel, he builds in right from the very beginning, a part of your design is to be a blessing to others. Now I'm gonna give you a blessing. It's gonna be great. It's gonna be so good for you. I want you to enjoy it, but I also want it to go through you. You're not merely a receptacle for the blessing, you're a conduit for blessing. And not only does he tell Abram this, but he goes to Abram's son, Isaac, and he reiterates this in Genesis 26. And then he goes to Abram's grandson, Jacob, and he reiterates it again in Genesis 28. I'm gonna bless you so that you can be a blessing to all the families on earth. It's built into the design of being human and built into the design of being a follower of God. In Exodus 19, so more than 400 years later, the blessing, the promise of God comes true, and Abram's family becomes a nation. There's so many descendants that they become a nation. He pulls them out of slavery. He pulls them out of Egypt. And as he's kind of setting up what this nation is gonna look like, he says this to them in Exodus 19. He says, for all the earth is mine, and you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. So two things in there speak to this this design of being a witness. One is a kingdom of priests. What does a priest do? Well, a priest is the intermediary between God and people. And so what priests do is they talk to God about people, they pray, and then priests go and they talk to people about God. They witness to the people what they know that God has told them. And then he says, you're gonna be holy, which means you're gonna be set apart. Okay, you're gonna be strange. Like he's like, you're gonna be in the world, but I don't want you to look like the world. I want you to look different. I want you to be different. Some translations actually say, they don't say like a holy nation, they say a strange nation. Now, some of you, that's actually pretty good news, because you're kind of strange. All right? You've been waiting for that verse. It's there. And you can use that translation all you want. All right? But the point is that God says, you're not gonna look like everybody else. Oh, you're gonna be in the world. And you're gonna be doing a lot of things that the whole world is supposed to be doing, but there's a lot of things that the world does, and you're not gonna look like them at all. I want you to be different. Okay? So a few hundred years later, again, a guy named Isaiah is on the scene. Isaiah 49:6, God says this about being a witness. I will make you as a light for the nations, that my salvation may reach to the ends of the earth. He says, this time he uses the metaphor of light. What does light do? Light makes it where we can see reality in a place of darkness. Like I remember when I was in fifth grade, they took a whole group of us on a field trip to a cave. All right, and it was a bunch of fifth grade guys in a cave. It was crazy, all right? And they turned the lights off, and they were like, it's gonna be pitch black. They actually told us, and I think this is the first time I ever had seen pitch blackness, they were like, you have probably never seen anything this dark. So they turned the lights off. I could not see my hand in front of my face. We're all screaming. We're not screaming because we're scared. We're screaming because we're fifth grade boys, right? And all the girls are like, shut up. And we are like, no, awesome. And they turn the lights on and we all act like we're depressed, but it's like, you're not supposed to live in darkness, right? So it was actually good that they turned the light back on. But here's the thing is, even if it is pitch black and you have like the smallest light, that light begins to show you what's reality. And what God says about his people is, I'm going to use you to show the world what's real. The world is in darkness. They can't see reality. But with you, I'm gonna use you like a light, and because of you, they're going to be able to see reality. Because if we bear the image of God well, because if we take the blessing that God has given us and we bless others, if we live out being holy in a kingdom of priests, then any environment that we go into, any sphere of influence that God has given us, we're gonna show people reality, right? And then again, let's keep going to another one. In Jeremiah 29, this is probably the worst part of Israel's history. A foreign nation has come in, made war on them, absolutely defeated them, killed tens of thousands of Israelites. They have burned down their cities, and they're taking anybody that is left, they're taking most of those people back to their city so that they can be assimilated and erase the nation of Israel. These were bad people, and they were enemies of Israel. But God sends a prophet, and he says to them this. Listen to this. Jeremiah 29:7. But seek the welfare of the city where I've sent you into exile, and pray to the Lord on its behalf, for in its welfare, you will find welfare. That word welfare right there is the Hebrew word shalom. It means peace. It means wholeness. It's a really loaded word. It's like all the ways that you're created to live in harmony with God and with each other, that's shalom. God says, I want you to take that to your enemies. I want you to take that sense of bearing the image of God, of being blessed to be a blessing to the very people that just killed tens of thousands of you and burned down your cities. Don't become like them, but go be a blessing in their city. Go be a witness to the goodness and the glory and the majesty of God in the city of your enemies. Now that's just the Old Testament. Like, this is before Jesus has come. But and I say that, the reason I wanted to go into the Old Testament is because I want you to understand that this is built into the design of being a follower of Christ from the very beginning. From the beginning, even before sin was in the world, we were designed to give witness to who God is. After sin enters the world in the Old Testament, we are. But it goes into the New Testament too. They very much, the writers here very much care about it. Jesus says in Matthew 5 on the Sermon on the Mount, verse 13, you're the salt of the earth. Verse 14, you are the light of the world. You're a city on a hill. It cannot be hidden. Verse 16, let your light shine before others that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven. Man, we're called salt. The salt does two things. Salt brings out the flavor of anything you put it on, and salt preserves. Like, I ate a steak 2 weeks ago. It was one of the worst steaks I've ever had. And the reason is because they didn't put salt on it. Like, my mother-in-law cannot eat any spices. And when I say any spices, that includes salt. She ordered a fish with no spices. They mixed it up with my steak. So I got my steak with no salt and no pepper, and I ate it because I'm gonna do that. But it wasn't very good. It wasn't very tasty. God says, you, as my people, are the salt of the earth. And you bring the best out of what's there, and you preserve it. That's what we're designed to do. Again, he uses that metaphor of light to show reality to the world. And lastly, I'm just gonna end with this one when I talk about what is a witness. 2 Corinthians 5:17, I know I quoted the first verse, but he says this earlier. He says this right after that. He says, the old has passed away. Behold, the new has come. All this is from God who through Christ reconciled us to himself and gave us the ministry of reconciliation. Let me drop down just a little bit. He says, therefore, we are ambassadors for Christ, God making his appeal through us. We implore you on behalf of Christ, be reconciled to God. In that passage, he says two things that are built into the Christian life. He gives us a ministry from the very beginning, the ministry of reconciliation, taking two things that are far and doing our part to join them back together, which is joining people who don't know Jesus back to Jesus. He's like, you have that ministry. You get to take that message to them and tell them why this is possible. And then he further elaborates it with this metaphor of an ambassador. Well, what is an ambassador? Well, an ambassador is someone who has a citizenship in one country but lives in another one and does what he or she can to make good relations between the two different countries. And a good ambassador is gonna love the culture that he or she lives in. He's gonna love it, gonna care about it. But he's also always gonna remember that their true citizenship is not in the country that they live, but in the country that they got sent from. You see, this idea of being a witness is built into our design. God talks about it all throughout the Bible. So what is a witness? Like what are you designed to be? What are those 24 instances of the word martus that I said, what do they really mean? What means you're an image bearer of God? You're a blessing to others. You're a priest of God. You're a light for God's salvation. You're bringers of peace. You're a city on a hill. You're the salt of the earth. You're a minister of reconciliation, and you're an ambassador of Jesus Christ. From the moment that you became a Christian, this was true about you. You don't have to try and then become a witness. You are a witness. When I became a Christian, I was in college. Now, I got one of those testimonies where I remember exactly where I was. Someone shared the gospel with me. We walked through all of my doubts. And then he asked the question, do you want to become a Christian? I said, yes. Okay. When I opened my eyes after I became a Christian, I remember thinking two things. I thought, one, this is the greatest thing that has ever happened to me. Everything I've ever wanted in life is found here. And the second thing I thought was, I've got to go tell my fraternity brothers. So I go back to school. Now listen, I did not grow up in going to church a lot. So I go back to school, we go to our first fraternity meeting, and there's a moment in the meeting where you can stand up and say whatever you want to say. So I'm like, I'm gonna stand up in my fraternity meeting and tell them I became a Christian. I go back to the first one, and the first one, I chicken out. Okay, I just am like, oh my gosh, I'm kind of sweating and I'm like, I can't do it. So I go, but I'm like, man, after I leave and I'm like, I don't feel good about that. I'm like, man, this gift is too good. I got to tell my fraternity brothers. So next week comes around, I decide I'm going to do it. I stand up in the fraternity meeting and I say, hey guys, I just need to let you know that I became a Christian and I'm completely different now. And they all start laughing. I mean, it's like a big joke to them. And some guy goes, so are you like born again? Well, I don't know what born again means. I've never read the book of John. So I'm just like, no, that sounds strange, but I did become a Christian. And later on, a guy kind of took me to John 3 and was like, you actually are born again. So if you ever get asked that question, the answer is yes. But I didn't know. But what I did know is that I really wanted my fraternity brothers to become Christians too. And I was like, look, man, I'm just like you. The only thing is that God did this crazy work in my life. I didn't do anything for it. It just happened. And that same thing can happen to you. And you know, I worked in a college ministry and we would really focus on lost people. And we would share the gospel with them and then disciple them. And you know what's kind of crazy? That story is not uncommon. It's like really common that like we would lead somebody to Christ and they would start telling people about Jesus before we even told them that they should. Do you want to know why? Because it's built into the design. The minute that they went from death to life, something started stirring in them that I've got to go tell people about this. Like that's what a witness is, okay? Now let me dive into this part because I want to how to be a witness. Now I do a lot of membership interviews here as one of the elders here. I do membership interviews. And one of the, like when we walk through the five identities, we ask them, where do you want to grow the most? Most people say, I want to grow in how to be a witness. Like I don't know how to do it, right? Well, let me walk through a few ways on how to be a witness before I close us out. Number one, I mean, built into the definition of being a witness, if you are a witness, then you have a message that needs to be spoken. You need to speak what you have seen, heard, and know to be true about Jesus. It should not be a secret in your circles of influence, in your families, in where you work that you're a Christian. That's not meant to be hidden. That's meant to be public. That's public information for people. But here's one of the things is that I think that like we kind of get either comfortable kind of coming to church and we forget about how important it is to share, or like we just have had some bad experiences. We've been sharing with someone and they just got really mad at us and it's led the church to kind of be quiet about their faith. In fact, the latest Barna study that I saw, only 2% of evangelicals actually share their faith with lost people. But what we need to remember is this is very true, is that out of the heart, the mouth speaks. So we're gonna talk about what we're interested in. And other people are gonna talk to us about what they're interested in. In fact, Americans are some of the people that love to share their opinions with you, okay? We, just as a group of people, we like to share our opinions. We're gonna, I mean, Curtis up here, you know, just made a reference, a little jab that I'm an Alabama fan, and I get it. It's a fun year to make fun of Alabama fans because we've lost 2 games. Okay, I get it, right? Like we love to share our opinions. Like that's just kind of what we do, right? And so, built into that is, as a witness, if you begin to ask people questions about their life, they're usually gonna tell you. If you begin to ask people's opinions on what they think about things, they're usually gonna tell you. And most people have enough self-awareness that once they know that you really care about them and that you really are engaged in this conversation, guess what they do? They flip the question on you. So if you ask them, hey, what do you think about spiritual things? What do you think about the Bible? What do you think about Jesus? What do you think about church? They'll begin to tell you and they'll flip the question back on you. And that gives you an opportunity to talk to them, about Jesus. Which leads me to my second point. You need to live in such a way that your life demands an explanation. Because we can't merely talk about the gospel. In fact, a good witness isn't merely bringing a verbal message. They're actually living out the implications of the message. You need to live in such a way that your life demands an explanation. A guy named Jeff Vanderstelt in his book, Saturate, says it like this. Live in such a way that what you do, why you do it, and how you do it forces you to talk about Jesus. I think most of us probably know people that the way that they live is so compelling that if you have opportunities, you would ask them questions about your life. How did you become like this? Like, why are there not more people, like you probably know people where you ask the question, why are there not more people like that person, that guy, that woman? Their life is that compelling. And when God says, you're supposed to be a holy nation, you're supposed to be set apart, this is what he's talking about. What's supposed to set us apart is how we love, how we forgive, the fact that if we make mistakes, we own up to it and we don't make excuses, that we're incredibly compassionate, we're incredibly generous, We open up our houses and homes to people that maybe we don't even know very well. Like, we're not primarily concerned about money or relationships. There should be something different about us. I remember when my granddad died, people said this about him. My granddad loved Jesus. They said, "Your granddad loved God, was a man of incredible integrity, and did business like above par, and he loved your Nana." And I was like, man, what a great three things to say about somebody. He also loved Alabama football. That was the fourth thing they told me. But what an incredible combination. But can I tell you, if he had not loved my Nana the way that he did, and he had not been a man of incredible integrity in his business, they never would have said the first one. They never would have been like, he loved Jesus. It was the second two that validated the message that he talked to them about. And that's what we need to do. We need to live in such a way that people look at us and are like, why do you live the way that you do? And then we get to tell them, it's because of Christ. It's because I've been radically transformed. And I've been given a gift that changes how I think and how I see the entire world. And so it changes how I interact with you. Okay? Number three, we need to seek the welfare of whatever circles of influence God has given you. We need to be a blessing. And as a church, we need to be a blessing to the city. And individually, you need to be a blessing in whatever like circles of influence God has given you. Your families, work, gym, whatever it is. We need to seek the welfare of those places. So look, I mean, it is a good thing that in whatever job that you have, you do the best that you can do. Like if you're a boss, you should be the best boss supervisor that you can be. If you own a business, you should do that like really, really well in every way, shape, and form. If you're a teacher, you should teach at an incredibly high level. Teach kids math in a really, really good way. If you're a high school student and you're on a sports team, like you should not go out there and just lollygag. You should be the best you can be. Now you don't need to strive to be better than you can be. Just be the best that you can be. Because when you do that, you're not just loving yourself, you're actually loving all the people around you. A teacher who teaches math really well is doing a great job with his or her students. You're loving your students when you do the best job. A salesman that goes into a situation and believes in his product and does a good job selling whatever it is at a fair price is helping not just himself, but also his customer. Right? That gives a testimony to God. And then when you go into those situations, you know that whatever that is not the ultimate thing that you're trying to do. You're actually also trying to love those people. And as a church, we don't primarily just need to think about how to have a really good worship service on the weekend. We need to think about how do we live this out when we walk out of this room? Like, what if we, like, I mean, our worship services are awesome here. They just, like, really are, right? I, like, love all the stuff that you guys do. But what if we lived lives that were this excellent Monday through Saturday? Like, what if we did this level of excellence, this level of declaring Christ in all that we do? This church would be unstoppable because the Holy Spirit would be moving through us in ways that are incomprehensible, right? So we need to be a blessing in all of the places that we go. Now listen, you might be sitting here right now and thinking, man, I either don't care to witness, or I don't even still hearing all this stuff. It's just like so hard. So there could be a lot of reasons why that is, but let me just point out two. One reason you may not be like living out your design and being a witness is that you've just kind of forgotten how amazing the gift is. And I like really get it with just the day in and day out of life. Man, it can kind of wear you down and it can be hard. But there is a reason that we come to church every single week. There's a reason that we encourage you to open up your Bibles every single day and read what God says and be a man or woman of prayer. There is a reason we encourage you to live in community, because all of those things will be a constant reminder of who God is. And as you are reminded who God is, you'll begin to bear the image clearly. But you do have to long for it, right? It's good news. I remember when I got the news from my wife that she was pregnant with our first kid. I freaked out, like kind of everybody does when you find out first time. We made a decision not to tell anybody for a month. I don't know. I don't remember why we made that decision. I think we were just like, let's wait. I got a phone call that afternoon, and guess what I did? I told them. It was great news. It was good news that we were not pregnant. My wife was pregnant. She always corrects me if I say that. It's good news. It was good news that she was going to have a baby. And the truth is I just couldn't hold it in. Like, if you understand the gift of salvation, if you understand the gift that God has given you, you're going to want to talk about it. So pursue it. Dig into your Bible. Ask God to help you understand it. He will. It's his desire. He wants to do that for you. The second reason you may not be a witness is because you're not really a Christian. You come to church every now and then. You might even give to the church. But your life has never been transformed by the gospel. You're not going to be able to live out of a design that you're not really created into. So you've got to be transformed. You got to be transformed by the power of the gospel first. Okay? And so at the end of the service, if that's you, we want you to come talk to us. And if you kind of feel that stirring right now, like, man, that is kind of me, and I don't know if I want to talk to somebody, but maybe I do. Can I tell you, that's not me. That's not your psyche. That's the Holy Spirit. That's God telling you, I want to talk to you about this. Okay, those are two reasons. There may be more, but those are two. But I want to end with this, because there's a fourth thing that witnesses do that's really critical, and I want to end with this one. You see, witnesses, we declare the message, we live out the message, but we don't change people's hearts. Only Jesus can do that. You see, if you became a Christian, more than likely somebody shared the gospel with you, probably shared the gospel with you many times, and they were probably a good witness. Like, you saw their life and you're like, that's attractive, I want that. But it was Jesus that changed your heart. And more than likely, that person who shared with you was praying for you. I remember at a Thanksgiving about 20 years ago, right after I became a Christian, my aunt's sister, who was a missionary in Mexico, came home and hung out with us. And I told her I became a Christian, and she started to cry. And I was like, yeah, it is. It's really good news. And she goes, I need to tell you, I've been praying for you since you were born. Now, I had not seen this woman. I mean, I hardly remembered her. And I remember telling her, God answered your prayers. She wasn't the only one praying for me. But the fact that there was someone who lived thousands of miles away praying for me struck me so hard, because I was like, man, God listens to prayers. He answers them. And that's what I want us to do right now. I want us to pray. Like, let me just tell you one more story. Like, when I first came to Summit, I was on staff of the college ministry, and we had a baptism weekend, and it was awesome for the ministry I was involved in. We had like 35 people that got baptized. They had become Christians in college and they got baptized. And it was like really great. But I remember seeing this guy, he was older, he was in his 70s, and he was getting baptized. And I looked over to the right and I saw three people about his age, and they were all weeping. And that guy got baptized and they were like praising God. And I that thought didn't leave my mind. And I saw one of the guys that was weeping about 2 years later. And I just told him, I was like, hey man, I saw this. Can you tell me what happened? And he goes, yeah. My wife and I met that man and his wife when we were in our 30s living in Durham. We shared the gospel with them for 10 years, and his wife became a Christian. She began to share and pray the gospel with her husband. We stayed friends with them, and 40 years later, he became a Christian. 40 years later, sharing the gospel, loving them, witnessing to them, bearing the image of God, using the blessings that God had given them to be a blessing to him. And after 40 years of prayer and labor, God changed that man's heart. Can I just go ahead and tell you, Those are not uncommon stories. That's how God has been working for all time. He uses his people doing ordinary things over a long period of time to win this world to Christ. That's how our church grew. Those kinds of stories. And so here's what I want to do. I want to put you in a position to pray right now. So just whoever you came with, just get in groups of two, and I want you to pray. I want you to pray maybe two things. Like one, if there's someone that's on your heart, like you've been hearing me preach and you're burdened, and you're like, I want this person to come to Christ. And I want you to pray for them, okay? You can pray by yourself if you want. Just if you bow your head, that's kind of the sign that I'm just gonna pray by myself, and that's fine. That is fine. But maybe if you're together, if you're in a group, you can pray together for the people that are on your heart. You may not have anybody that's come into your heart, okay? Because you haven't really engaged in this in a long time. So what I want you to do is I want you to just pray that God, give me the desire to be a witness. God, let me do whatever you need to do so that I can live out my design, how you designed me, and I can get out of second gear and get into fifth gear, okay? And I also am just gonna do this because this is really good on the first service at least. Y'all too, come down here, right here. And then are there any elders or anybody on our prayer team on this side of the room that I can get? Come down here. Look, some of you might have someone that's really dear on your heart, okay? Like maybe it's a wayward son or a wayward daughter. Maybe it's just someone you've been praying for 20 years. And in this time as everybody's praying, maybe you just wanna even do one more step and just come down front and pray with us. Like the church is meant to be a house of prayer. We're meant to lift these things up. We're meant to talk to God about the people that we want him to move in their lives. That's part of this design. So what I'm gonna do is we're gonna just kind of vamp over you for a little bit. In about 5 minutes, we're gonna go into worship. But between now and then, I just want you to pray where you are. You can pray out loud in your groups. You can pray silently by yourselves, or you can come down here and pray with one of these people. So we're gonna do that right now. So bow your heads and pray where you are, or come forward and pray.